Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Welcome to the 1984 NBA College Draft. The Houston Rockets select Hakeem Olajuwon of the University of Houston.
It is official. The well-attired Hakeem Olajuwon, who started playing basketball just 5 years ago from Nigeria, is now the number one pick.
Happy New Year's. Welcome to The Jump. That was, of course, David Stern's very first NBA draft. I'm Amino Hassan, filling in for Rachel Nichols. Today I'm joined by NBA champion and co-host of the All the Smoke show, Matt Barnes, and our ESPN NBA insider, David McMenamin. All right, coming up, Zion practiced today for the Pelicans and told reporters that if it was up to him, he would have been out there 2 weeks ago. Is Zion's debut imminent? We'll discuss that later. But first, yesterday news broke that former NBA commissioner David Stern, who had been hospitalized over the last few weeks after suffering a brain hemorrhage on December 12th, died at 77. Look, if you're an NBA fan of any sort, you probably don't need me to detail the list of accomplishments that happened under Stern's watch, like growing the game globally by the creation of the Dream Team and helping shepherd the league and really society at large through HIV awareness after the announcement of Magic Johnson's contraction of the virus. There are plenty of excellent articles written yesterday that will do a more thorough job than I ever can here. Nor will I dissect his missteps, like allowing Donald Sterling to remain a part of the NBA despite blatant and repeated abhorrent behaviors. Many of those same articles do that as well. Rather, I want to talk about what made Stern such an intriguing and complex character, a man who is beloved by many and respected by almost all, despite universally known for his acerbic style and caustic wit that he wasn't shy of unleashing on all sorts of targets, from employees to media members, even the owners whom he purported to work for. I wondered how a man could walk that tightrope of being abrasive yet affable, of being able to mercilessly maul his opponents verbally, something that he indeed seemed to relish the opportunity to do, but yet could still be thought of so fondly. I spoke to several people who had worked with Stern over the years, and the response was near unanimous. He was extremely driven and wanted what was best for the NBA and would not sugarcoat his messages. But also, he had the emotional intelligence to pick up the pieces afterward. Warriors president and COO Rick Welts, who spent 17 years working alongside Stern in the NBA, told me, quote, "Sometimes the delivery would be harsh, but he would always circle back and put an arm around you," end quote. Suns VP Mark West, who was on the executive board of the Players Association during the 1998 lockout, recalled contentious, perhaps even dismissive exchanges with the commissioner in the CBA negotiations boardroom, and then being approached by Stern years later to discuss how to better prepare players for post-playing career life. Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, the recipient of a lot of Stern tirades and a lot more Stern fines, told Mark Stein of the New York Times, quote, "He was incredible to me, even when he was yelling at me." That duality of being simultaneously aggressive and caring, combined with his incredibly sharp sense of humor, was central to that tightrope walk between abrasive and affable. I'd like to end with a quick example of that sense of humor at play. While an event in London held at a Japanese-Brazilian fusion restaurant, Stern opened with, "I'm so pleased to be here at this typically British establishment." Rest in peace, David Stern. All right, Matt, how will NBA players remember David Stern?
I think as a pioneer. I think someone who took the league in the early 80s, which was rumored to be drug-filled and too black, and had a vision for it. And a lot of people laughed at his vision. But over the years, although he hit some bumps along the way, globalized the game, top players had to market themselves as brands as well. And I think he did a great job for the NBA. So it's sad. Tomorrow's never promised. Obviously condolences to his family, but he'll definitely be missed.
Yeah, I remember I started my career with NBA.com before ESPN, and I was an NBA employee in some way. So I was invited to the holiday Christmas party, winter party. And I'm in line to just get the spread, and lo and behold, David Stern is in front of me. And this is like a cartoon character come to life. And he had already spoken to the crowd and talked about how the NBA had grown. They used to rent out the top floor of a restaurant, and it was just a couple dozen people there. Now they had rented out, a banquet hall. And son of a deli owner, and he had never met me before. I'm 24 years old at the time, and he goes out of his way to turn around, and as I'm filling my plate, he goes, "Get the beef. It cuts like butter." And I love that he had that kind of everyman side to him, but known as a brilliant negotiator and a brilliant mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think about, you asked me right before we came on air if I ever met him. I said I met him one time. It was maybe 10 seconds long, and he ended it with asking who the bleep was that. But, you know, Matt, I want to know, you know, you probably had more dealings than I did.
Yeah, he took a lot of my money. Yeah. You know, that kind of happened. But, a few handshakes here and there. The one time we did have a conversation, I think, was going into my final year with Sacramento when he came to Sacramento to see the new arena and everything. Mm-hmm. And he walked by and patted me on the back and said, "The bad guy always finds a job," in air quotes. And then he said, he just told me, "You know, I love your heart. Good luck this season." So, like I said, someone that was what was best for the league, and what I appreciate about the most, because I'm similar in that way, don't sugarcoat anything. Like I said, you may not like what I'm going to tell you, but you're going to respect it because I'm always going to give it to you real, and that's how David Stern gave it to you.
I want to ask you, because you covered the lockout a little bit, and that was a time where there was a lot of contentiousness between Stern and the media. I was talking to my buddy Ethan Strauss, and he felt like a lot of it was Stern wanted you to come back at him. He was doing that to see if you were going to try and challenge him back, and that's what he relished. Did you ever have any those kind of exchanges with him?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. First of all, Ethan wrote a wonderful piece about Stern, he'd test you, and you had to have your facts straight, and you know he was willing to push it to any boundary he had to. If you recall in that lockout, he used the term "we're heading towards a nuclear winter," because he was basically saying and trying to use the media in any capacity he could to get the message to the players that if you keep messing around, you will not get any paycheck for the remainder of the season. Now, I was one that was on the side of labor in that dispute when I was kind of taking my side and reporting. And so messing around might not be the right characterization, but that's what he was trying to push forward because he was trying to do his job for his owners.
Hmm? Yeah, it's a tremendous job that he did. You know, we talk about the game when he took over, I believe NBA revenues as a whole was $150 some odd million when he left his $5 billion, and that's over the span of 30 years. As far as the global game, though, when you talk about, there's two things that he did. One was he was really instrumental in the creation of Dream Team, and two was in 1989, he was one of the first outside professional sports entities to go to China and say, "Hey, we're the NBA. Maybe you guys want to pay attention to us." As from the international perspective, let's start there. What do you think is the biggest fingerprints that we can look at right now?
I mean, the tent poles are certainly the Dream Team and getting behind that when pro athletes hadn't competed in an amateur event, and Yao Ming coming into the league and him being a proponent and a supporter of that. But now you fast forward to today, the reigning MVP is Giannis Antetokounmpo, a Nigerian descent who grew up in Greece, and Luka Doncic, Slovenian, is perhaps the most ascendant popular talent that we have. Right. That wouldn't occur. And, of course, Dirk Nowitzki retired last year. Former Finals MVP Tony Parker retired. I mean, who's from France and Germany for Dirk. All of this talent has made the league a better place, and it's made the league more profitable.
I completely agree.
You know, the other thing I was really touched by when I looked through, a lot of people posted on their Instagram accounts and Twitter accounts, "Hey, rest in peace, you did great things for the game." But I thought LeBron and your old buddy Jason Richardson, they both had something different, which was David Stern represented, "That's my dream. I want to go up on that stage and shake his hand." And, when I saw that, it was kind of a different kind of tribute to him, in that it was more than just, "Hey, David Stern, the guy that made the NBA where it is today," but, you know, more so of like he's a symbol of not the finish line, but like I made it.
Right. No, and I heard a lot of guys speak to him as a father figure as well. You know what I mean? Like I said, he was someone who was always there. Obviously, getting your name called in the lottery and shaking his hand is kind of like a, I made it. You know what I mean? Now there's a lot of work to do. So, I mean, I know a lot of people resonated and could appreciate that. But like I said, glowing his vision was to grow the game globally. And I think it took some time, but it got there. And he obviously left the game in great hands now with Adam Silver. But I think the growth of the game and now showing kids all around the world that they actually do have a chance to play in the NBA. That's only, driving the fan base up and continuing to drive players' salaries up. So, like I said, hell of a human. we're definitely going to miss him. And life is short, man.
Absolutely. All right, coming up, Timberwolves rookie Jared Culver yammed on Robin Lopez, and things got heated. He said something, too. It's not just because he dunked on him. Whose side are you on? Find out our answers right after the break. But first, it's time for our district replay from this date in 2003 featuring Amari Stoudemire.
Well, and again, another uncontested layup.
Oh, yeah. That was young stat right there.
You were out there in those days, right?
Nah, this is way before me.
Yeah.
Standing tall and talented.
I was from Atlanta at this time.
Child, he goes through the basket.
Oh, man.
The passion, like he's trying to tear your head off. It's just kind of highlight.
Those old Sixer uniforms, too.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or miss league.
Oh, I have no idea.
Make.
Miss. It's a make or miss league.
Why was Brandon Ingram so mad? Make sharing. Markelle Fultz had 8 assists in just 22 minutes last night. This behind-the-back diamond transition was the best of the night. Dave, have you seen improvement from Fultz as a point guard?
Well, I think what's key, he's a combo guard. And that's what is so important in today's NBA. You don't need a guy who can only set people up but can also score. Not a guy who can only score but can also set people up. It will allow him to play in any sort of offense as he moves forward in his career. Maybe it'll be in Orlando, maybe it'll be somewhere else.
I think in today's age, you have to be able to do everything from the guard position. Yeah. And I think I'm just happy this kid's on the floor. You know, tremendous talent come out of college. Who knows what happened in Philly. But I'm glad that he's back out there smiling, having a good time, and playing the game he loves.
So all I ever said, you're doing all that stuff, don't worry about the jump shot. Play your game. Miss respect. T-Wolves rookie Jared Culver threw down on Robin Lopez and talked a little smack. Lopez was not having it and followed him all the way down court. Matt, whose side are you taking here?
I've chased someone off that court before into the locker room one time and got fined heavily for it. I love the dunk first and foremost, but if you're going to talk to trash to someone like Robin, you better be ready because I know he loves to wrestle. He probably likes to fight, and he's just a big caveman. So you got to be careful and pick and choose who you're talking trash to.
But what was Robin's motivation here? Did you just want to chalk trash back to him in his face? I didn't quite get it. Stalking him all the way down the court.
I think the fact that he said something twice, I think it was a little sign of disrespect, but I love the dunk. First and foremost.
A great dunk. Robin, the quote from his reading his lips was, "What the bleep did you just say to me?"
Right.
So I don't know what he said.
Right.
All right. Make box scores. Mitchell Robinson was a perfect 11 for 11 from the field last night versus the Blazers. He tied the Knicks record for most makes without a miss. Dave, should we put more respect on Mitchell Robinson's name, or would we put more respect if he wasn't a Knick?
I think perhaps. I do think when you look at this Knicks roster, obviously they don't have Kyrie or Kevin Durant, but someone will get this job moving forward, and they can look at not only Mitchell Robinson, but Knox and Barrett and say, maybe there's something here to work with.
I like Robinson. He's on that DeAndre Jordan plan. You know, stay in the paint, lead the league in field goal percentage. He dunks everything. He blocks everything. He's definitely one of their cornerstones going forward. But I just love his energy. You know, they're bringing him off the bench now for that spark, and that's definitely what he's given them. And, I mean, 11 for 11, I don't care where you're at. That's an amazing game.
Am I crazy to say that that might be a good job? Miss!
Yes.
Dunk contest. Kelly Oubre had another great dunk last night. 2 weeks ago on the jump, he said he's more than a, quote, in-game dunker and not interested in the dunk contest. Matt, should we put more pressure on him to enter the dunk contest?
I like this kid, man. I like this kid. I like his game. He's dunking up. He's got a lot of swag. If he doesn't want to dunk, he doesn't want to dunk. But, I mean, I'll take these game dunks all day.
I think it's interesting. He's shown so many versatile parts of his game. He found himself as a scorer coming out of Kansas, and then he was becoming a defensor player first, and then, you know, defensive-minded player first, and then now we're seeing him kind
nice
of expand.
1-2 punch with Booker over there.
And the season's going to end in April anyway. You might as well do a dunk contest. Make collaboration! Speaking of poster dunks, does anyone end up in these situations more than Aaron Baines?
Poor guy.
He got him last night on this alley-oop.
Everybody just wants to climb the mountain, though.
Saying, and they why? Why?
Because if you get him, it's just going to look so impressive because he looks like a mound of a person.
Wrong, dude.
And you contrast that with some big athletic or a smaller athletic guy going over him. It's going to make for highlight reels and Instagram likes.
I respect him going for all these blocks. You're going to get dunked on when you go for these blocks, but he just gets dunked on a little more than average.
Where are the blocks, though?
Oh, we had a little altercation with the
Look at that. First of all, look how young he looks without the beard. Second of all,
I think he wanted to show his toughness, but he's not going to out-tough me.
He just wrestled him into the crowd.
Poor photographer.
And they put the hands, what do the hands up mean?
You know they want to give me a fee anytime I'm on that court, so.
Time to run it back to the top three most memorable dunks on Aaron Baines. Oh, first up, this game, same game we just saw, Blake Griffin in 2015. Spurs and Clippers, game one of the playoffs. Oh, disgusting. Just filthy.
Is that why he grew the beard? So he could just disguise himself from the old highlights?
Ooh. Number two, Giannis in 2018. Eastern Conference first round. And that same... Yeah, it is kind of the same dunk, right? Coming on the same...
Right through.
Yeah. Again, I want to see someone show me some blocks that he's had. Same season, number one, Joel Embiid in the Eastern Semi.
So you need to go hang out with Shaq this summer and learn how to hard foul because you're getting dunked on way too much.
I'm just saying, like Alonzo Mourning got dunked on a lot, but I remember Alonzo Mourning blocking people. Mutombo blocking people. Ewing blocking people.
And those are all from playoff games, too, where more people are watching.
Yeah.
I respect the fact he's going for them, but you got to block some of them.
Something. You got to charge something. All right, let's get to the Lakers, who looked great early against the Suns last night, but didn't finish the game strong. After leading by as many as 36 against Phoenix, the Lakers allowed the game to get as close to 7 points in the fourth quarter, ultimately winning by 10. Dave, was the tone of the Lakers encouraged or discouraged after that game?
Pretty discouraged. They wanted to, start anew for 2020, like we all do with resolutions. And Frank Vogel challenged them to not only win, but to dominate this stretch of games they have coming up. And they showed it for a little bit. But then you're going to be discouraged by not only the fact that the players let up, and there's some human nature there,
right.
But 36 down to 7, maybe human nature, you say 36 down to 15 or something like that, but also discouraged by Frank Vogel's rotation. He ran LeBron and AD long minutes in the third quarter, hoping to rest them the entire fourth. They did have a 22-point lead at that point, but his bench unit had already given some confidence to the Phoenix starters. They couldn't keep it going, and then they had to bring back LeBron and AD. To me, that was a little short-sighted by Frank. Don't run them such long minutes in the third quarter, so then it's not as dramatic when you have to play them extra minutes in the fourth.
This happens. You know, I mean, they let their foot off the gas. It happens to the best of them. Like I said, the fact that they got the lead, they got the way they were playing when they were clicking, looking very impressive. I like the fact that Avery Bradley is starting to come along. I think he's going to be a key piece down the stretch. Hearing that Darren Collison wants to come back, I think he would be a great fit for their second unit. Someone can get his own shot, someone who plays both sides of the ball, someone can get other people involved. That second unit needs a little bit of help, but I'm not discouraged at all. It happened. These are the dog days of the season, people understand. Now until All-Star break, there's going to be some ugly losses. There are going to be some big comebacks. And, you know, until you get to All-Star break and post-All-Star break is when you're going to start seeing some better basketball.
Let me ask you that along those lines. If the season ends and this is the squad that they have going into the playoffs, is that a concern for you, that bench depth?
Not necessarily, because they've got guys who've been there and done that. My concern really is more Bron's management of the game, and I think he's doing a great job of it. They need to continue to ride AD so that LeBron can be as fresh as possible going into the playoffs. It's going to be a two-man show. Everyone knows that, but I think they're depending on if they get over the hump or not is how fresh LeBron is going to be in those playoffs.
But is that a reason to be discouraged then by what happened last night?
Not necessarily, because they still won. You know, like I said, they still won. Like I said, this January stretch for players I know being in that locker room, this is the stretch where like, let's just get through this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like I said, the fact that when they were playing well, they were hitting on all cylinders, they're up 40. Yep. So it shows what their potential is. They let their foot off the gas. It happens often, and they'll be all right.
All right, we have more to come in the next segment on David Stern. Here's what The Jump recommends for today. Adrian Wojnarowski's piece on how David Stern was a force of nature. The story includes past quotes from Stern himself and some of the league's biggest names in reaction to events surrounding the career of the legendary former commissioner. Clinton Yates will join us to discuss Stern next. It's The Jump.
In his 30 years as commissioner, David Stern made it possible for the NBA to scramble from the brink of bankruptcy and irrelevance to a position of global significance unthinkable in the dark days of the late 1970s and early 1980s, when the league was beset by drug problems, teams were going bankrupt, and the finals were on tape delay. That stunning reversal of fortune is why Stern will be remembered as perhaps the greatest leader of any sports league ever. Of course, the league's rebirth can't be attributed solely to Stern's savvy and toughness. It wasn't Stern, after all, who fashioned from clay the transcendent Larry Bird-Magic Johnson rivalry. It wasn't Stern who imbued Michael Jordan with his gifts, either. But make no mistake, there might be no other sports executive ever who so adeptly utilized the tools at his disposal. No other commissioner who so clearly recognized and exploited the resources of his sport. With Stern in charge, the NBA called itself fantastic. But it was really a star factory. The league marketed its stars to the hilt. And no league ever better mastered the art of marketing than David Stern's NBA. At its inception, years before the advent of the internet, not to mention Twitter or Instagram, the slam dunk contest was a phenomenon. A must-see event created by Stern's lieutenant Rick Welts. People too young to have seen Jordan versus Dominique in the heyday of the competition can hardly fathom how big a deal it was. Then, in 1992, there was the Dream Team, the ultimate expression of Stern's strategic thinking, of his desire to make the league a global brand. With Jordan and Magic and Barkley in Olympic uniforms, the world was suddenly safe for Stern's unique brand of basketball diplomacy and capitalism. Soon, the entire planet would be turned into a marketplace for NBA TV rights, and eventually, the jerseys of players such as LeBron James. 10 years after the first Dream Team won gold in Barcelona, Yao Ming was the top overall pick in the draft. This was not coincidence. In its own way, Yao's arrival was a milestone on the same order of magnitude as the Magic Bird rivalry and the rise of Michael Jordan. There was a good reason why Stern had a seat on the Council on Foreign Relations. In terms of his management style, Stern was not a man to be trifled with. He could be intimidating, demanding, imperious. In fact, all of the above. But he could also be charming and refreshingly blunt and honest, even on the subject of the owners for whom he worked. For example, when the New York Knicks lost a court battle about sexual harassment in their front office.
It demonstrates that they're not a model of intelligent management.
Of course, under Stern, who reigned for so long, there were many challenges and controversies. Even as total revenue and player salaries skyrocketed, there were too many lockouts. There was the infamous Pacers-Pistons brawl in Detroit, which exposed a yawning disconnect in the relationship between players and fans. Tim Donaghy, a veteran NBA referee, went to prison on gambling-related charges. But in the end, David Stern will be remembered for all the ways in which he elevated the game, enriching his owners and the players, popularizing the league in places where it had been virtually unknown. He also helped create the WNBA and championed it. Back when Stern took over, it would have seemed at best unlikely that the NBA would become a global behemoth. It's perhaps the ultimate testament to David Stern's vision that now it all seems to have been inevitable.
Thank you to Jeremy Schapp for his thoughtful tribute to former NBA Commissioner David Stern. We now welcome to The Jump, columnist for the undefeated Clinton Yates.
What's up, guys?
No applause. What are you doing here today? Come on, guys. 2020.
Say Happy New Year, kiddos. That's all we have.
All right, Clint, how will you remember Commissioner Stern?
You know, what's interesting about Stern to me is from looking at this from more than just a basketball perspective, if you think about the people that were concurrent with him as commissioners, you had Tagliabue, mm-hmm. you had Bud Selig, you had Bettman, who used to work for Stern, with Stern. Yeah. You don't think about those guys as being even remotely likable or personable characters that you trusted their leagues with. And as much as you want to talk about various decisions that Stern made, Seattle is one that comes to mind, mm-hmm. the situation regarding uniforms and all that, you still always sort of felt like when it came to stewardship, even if you disagreed with Stern, he believed in what it was he was trying to do for the league. And that responsibility element, even if it personally disagreed with what I thought he should have done or anybody else should have done, I think there was a lot there that made him likable to a larger, you know, community of people than just basketball fans.
You know, it's funny, you bring up other commissioners, and I was talking on the radio about this. I said, think about something like the Jordan 1s that the band shoes, right? Because they went against the color codes of the NBA at the time. I said, imagine if Roger Goodell were GM of the NBA, commissioner of the NBA at that time. They'd still have the shoe policy. Yeah. Stern saw it and said, all right, this seems to be something that is drawing attention. Let's loosen up these rules. Let's make it something so that we can take advantage of. And I thought that he was always a master of that. Even if he had a hard stance on something, He was always looking on another way to take advantage of it.
It always shocked me, too, how much when I would go overseas as a teenager, like playing ball on random courts, people knew who David Stern was. And that was stunning to me. People forget, David Stern was side by side with Magic Johnson when he made his announcements about HIV. Right. David Stern was in a lot of visible places that I think commissioners didn't even occur to them that it would make sense to be. I mean, when was the last time you thought about watching a commissioner at a game? They're half the gifts in the world now are David Stern at actual NBA games that he was either a part of as a commissioner or he returned to as an emeritus. And that matters from a vision standpoint, from a visibility standpoint. I think that is ultimately what is going to be his biggest legacy. He knew how to put people in the right places. And you know how he knew? He was there.
Well, to me, you mentioned stewardship. He had the foresight and the vision to groom Adam Silver. So when he retired in 2014, the league had someone ready who had been prepped for damn near 20 years and know the inner workings of it, of everything that's going on, who had gone from different parts of the company, you know, NBA Entertainment through the, you know, the business operations side, who knew how everything worked and had kind of his own spin on things that David allowed that personality to grow as well.
Yeah, no, I think he was, no pun intended, stern to his points, but not big enough to not listen to other people and realize, like you said, with the shoes, okay, this is going to grow the game. This is going to better the game. So he was really stern on what he thought was right and what aligned with his vision, but he wasn't closed-minded. And you got to respect that because he looked at everything, okay, I may not like this, but this is going to grow the game. Let's do it.
The WNBA is the biggest example of that. As much as people want to say, oh, well, people don't watch this, people don't watch that, being at the helm when that league came to be, to exist and looking at what it is now, I mean, that to me is almost as largest actual sports impact legacy.
Val Ackerman, the first commissioner of WNBA, told David Aldridge that, along with Billie Jean King, David Stern is the most influential person for women's sports in the 20th century. I mean, that's a huge thing to say.
Big.
All right, 2019 number one overall pick Zion Williamson participated in his first full practice since he had surgery on his meniscus in his right knee on October 21st. Zion also spoke to reporters about his timetable for making his NBA debut. He said something pretty funny. Take a listen.
If it was up to me, I'd have been out there like 2 weeks ago or something. But, it was just good to get back out there. It'll probably be one of those moments where, just like when it came to my college decision, I woke up and I just know. I'm not trying to just say something. That's my honest answer. I'll probably have to wake up one day and be like, all right, Griff, Trajan, coach, training stuff. I'm ready. Y'all let me go.
All right, Matt, is there any sense of urgency for him to get his debut out of the way?
No, and I think sometimes the athletes, we have to be protected from ourselves. You know, case in point, DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Durant sometimes, you know, guys that could have probably taken more time and got healthy but wanted to come back because they love the game and they want to play. We don't know anything else, but let's go out there, help our teammates, let's go out there and play. This is probably one of the most anticipated debuts in how long? You know what I mean? The world's been waiting on Zion. So I'm glad that the staff is taking their time and making sure. You know, I had a similar injury. You know, this is a 6 to 8 week injury, but then really trusting your knee is a whole nother process. So I'm glad they're really taking their time with this. There's definitely no rush.
To that point, though, are we allowed to criticize the Pelicans for playing him at all during summer league? I mean, if he was coming off of the knee injuries and where we were, I don't want to feel like we're being overly punitive to a team for now trying to do the right thing. But if you could have traded never playing him for him perhaps being back now, would you have done it? I mean, and I think that's a reasonable question in terms of the number one overall pick has not played a regular season game in the first season that he's there when we thought he was going to be there by Christmas. This is unfortunate. I'm just really glad that they were smart enough to tell him, no, you can't play now and you can't play until you want.
But he tore up the preseason, though. I understand those games don't count towards the win-loss ledger, but he was in a good spot. One thing I'll say, it's been an abject disappointment of the season for the Pelicans, but the only good part about that now is when he does play, they don't have to worry about him chasing wins. You can just manage his minutes to have him in a context of an NBA game get better, get his body right. And then if you got to pull him, you don't have to worry about, okay, he's trying to win us a game in a playoff race.
I just want to point out something real quick because one of the reports that also came out was that they had to reteach him how to walk and how to run. And that combined with Zion saying, if it was up to me, I'd be back 2 weeks ago. I know, Matt, you know the training staff mafia. When you get hurt, they make you, break you down and say, this is why you got hurt. I'm talking about Aaron Nelson and Tom Maysad over there in New Orleans who were with us in Phoenix. They know why you got hurt. It's probably because you're favoring something and this muscle's not firing and this muscle has to kind of compensate or whatever. And so what I'm hearing is that Zion is physically feeling good, but they're saying, no, 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 no. We have to address the issues that you had before.
First and foremost, that's one of the best staffs in the league. I remember them from Phoenix, very on top of everything. And the one good thing about Zion is, what is he, 19, 20? It's still early enough to teach him how to redo it. You know what I mean? I remember we went to something out in, where were we at? Santa Barbara one time when I was with the Magic, and they were trying to tell me and Vince Carter how to redo something. We're like, you know, we're in our 30s. Like, it's not going to work out.
You know what I mean?
But the chance, the fact that he's young and still young enough to do it, you know, orthotics and whatever they need to do, but you can tell that if something has to happen, he has to bring the weight down a little bit. But like I said, it's the patience on his return, I definitely appreciate.
Coming up, Darren Collison walked away from millions on the table this past offseason when he retired as a free agent. But there are reports that Collison is eyeing a comeback with either L.A. team. How much could he help? We'll discuss next. Millions! SportsCenter tonight after the Gator Bowl with Don Anderson and Kenny Mayne. We'll have an exclusive interview with Texans J.J. Watt, who was playing Saturday after surgery 2 months ago for a torn pec. SportsCenter on ESPN and the ESPN app. And speaking of J.J. Watt and the Texans, Wild Card Weekend starts with our game on ESPN and ABC. Saturday at 4:35 Eastern, Josh Allen and the Bills take on Deshaun Watson and the Texans in Houston. Coverage starts with postseason NFL countdown at 3 Eastern. You can also watch live on the ESPN app. Darren Collison's retirement was a big surprise leading into free agency this past offseason, but according to Adrian Wojnarowski, he's considering a return in February with the Clippers and Lakers as his preferred destination. Ah, could we all be that lucky? Matt, what would be the better fit for him, Clippers or Lakers?
I think Lakers. I think he's someone that can get his own shot with that second unit, which they desperately need, someone that can run the pick and roll, someone who plays both sides of the ball and can knock down that mid-range shot. I would hesitate going to the Clippers, one, because when we were there together, I don't know how well him and Doc got along. Mm. And then two, with that second unit, with Darren with the ball, he's taking the ball to loose hands. So those are two things that kind of concern me, but I definitely think the Lakers would be a great fit.
I think the Lakers could use him more, that's for sure. But I feel like the framework of the Clippers is one that might allow him to get a little bit better into it just because of what you said. He's got to know that relationship, and maybe as a veteran he figures that out. But shout to this dude. Let me take a quick sabbatical. Let me go ahead and not play and then realize I want to come back and then pick between the two teams. I mean, I'm just going to say this speaks to what a player-controlled league this is now. I understand he turned down a lot of money from a free agent standpoint, but this was kind of unheard of at a certain point in the league, and I love him for being able to do it. I hope it works out.
If the Lakers can land him, it would be what a fortuitous turn of events, because not only did the DeMarcus thing not work out, they ended up with Dwight Howard, who's been huge for them. If they could add Collison at this stage of the year, wow. I mean, he was a guy who was considered being in line for $10 million a year. Mm-hmm. They could get him for the veteran minimum plus the player exception, disabled player exception they get for Dwight. That's a bargain on top of being a person who can really help them.
Do you see mutual interest in that way?
Oh, I mean, the Lakers, and I reported this on Brian Windhorst's Hoop Collective podcast several weeks ago, backup point guard is the number one priority as they look towards improving their roster as we go to the postseason.
I feel like this is the same conversation we're going to have in March when Andre Iguodala gets bought out because he won't get traded because the Grizzlies are asking too much. Iguodala's going to have a decision to go, should I go to a team like the Lakers that needs me or a team like the Clippers that probably doesn't need me as much but is maybe a better team. And I think that's the same thing that Collison would probably have to weigh if he does.
And there's extra motivation of blocking the other team from
getting. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Part of it is just keep away. Yeah. All right, let's get to the Sixers, who are in action on ESPN tomorrow. In their previous game, they lost to the Pacers by 18 on New Year's Eve. Josh Richardson wasn't happy with the Sixers after that loss. Here's what he told the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, "I don't think there's enough accountability in our locker room right now, honestly. I think that we got some new guys who don't want to step on toes, including myself. I think we kind of go play and don't compete as much." Clinton, Brett Brown responded today.
Yeah.
And this is what he said.
He said he's fine with it.
I'm fine with it. I live in the truth really well. I like the truthful discussions. If they feel they can be more candid with one another, then so be it. All right, Clinton.
What does this say to me?
What does all this mean?
This says to me, we all miss Jimmy Butler in Philadelphia. Yeah. Because accountability
now we
is
miss
what
Jimmy
G Buckets brought to the table when it came to dealing with young players, when it came to how veterans were approaching the game. That was his core strength as the guy in your locker room. You see it down there in Miami and how much that team has improved. Look, I don't necessarily think accountability is even their even biggest problem, but I do think that they miss Butler in this regard.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, how can they be so much on the seesaw? A week ago, they were pounding the Milwaukee Bucks on Christmas Day, and there was no accountability then. Right. They're having that much success. So, to me, tone setter. That's what speaks to me. And Jimmy Butler was that guy. Now, Joel Embiid addressed these comments today at practice, and he said we need to be comfortable outside our comfort zone, including sometimes if there's space on the floor, we need to be comfortable shooting it.
What does that mean?
It means that he's saying Ben Simmons without saying Ben Simmons' name.
Okay.
So, Matt, is it a structural thing, or do you think it's what Josh was just talking about?
It's leadership. You know, it's leadership. It's what the question mark on this team has always been. Who's going to be the leader? Jimmy Butler filled that void perfectly. He took the bullets. He took everything. He let people know what was going on, and they played well. So not having him, all right, who's the leader? Is Joel Embiid the leader, or does he play too much? Is Ben Simmons the leader, or is he too quiet? They don't have a leader. And to me, what Josh Richardson said is on point. But say it to your team.
Right.
No need to take this to the media. Let's just hold a team meeting and clear the air. I think too often we take stuff that should stay in the locker room and take it outside the locker room and allow us to kind of dive in and break that locker room up a little bit. But to me, who's going to be the leader on that team? That should be a team conversation.
I'm still mad at Ben Simmons for not playing in the World Cup when he could have improved his game that way and decided he was going to be on Instagram in the gym with his homies. That's accountability on the larger level that some people might believe is part of the issue.
Big fan of Australian basketball, Clinton Yates. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm trying.
Come back soon, bro. All right, up next, the Heat and the Raptors have an Eastern Conference showdown tonight. Who's the bigger threat this season? Find out next on The Jump.
I know it is back and minutes away. Pablo and I will discuss if Urban Meyer should coach the Browns.
Are the Cowboys going to actually keep Jason Garrett?
Will the Bucks move on from Jameis Winston?
And can anything or anyone please fix the Sixers? Stay tuned.
All kinds of things I keep trying to tell you that you don't want to listen to.
All that and more.
Don't do it, Urban Meyer. Tip off the new year with our star-studded NBA doubleheader tomorrow on ESPN and the ESPN app. Sixers take on the Rockets at 8 p.m. Eastern. Then the Lakers host AD's former team, the Pelicans, at Staples Center. Coverage begins with NBA Countdown at 7. All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Zach LaVine said about his preseason predictions the Bulls would make the playoffs. Quote, I think we should be right in that hunt. Matt, the Bulls are 2 games out of the 8th spot in the East. Do you see them making it into the postseason?
I think anything can happen in the East. I just love the emergence of Zach LaVine. I think he's finally on people's radar. I've known how talented he is for a long time, former Bruin shout out, but he's a tremendous player. So he definitely should be an all-star this year. And if he can get his team to the playoff, that's a big jump.
They're young. They play hard. You got Carter Jr. in there. You have Markkanen. And they're chasing Orlando, who is going to be without Jonathan Isaac, it seems, for a little bit here with an injury scare. Yep. So yeah, maybe that's enough to get them over the hump.
I don't know who shouts out UCLA more, you or Kerry Champion. All right, don't look now, but the Spurs are back in the 8th spot out of the West. Dave, were we too quick to bury the Spurs like the zombies they are? They came back.
Well, first of all, I never buried them.
I've seen
respect for that program, of course. But, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge still finds his spots on the court. DeMar DeRozan is not an analytic stream, I should say, but he can find ways to be effective, and you have one of the best coaches in basketball. And, quite frankly, in a weakened Western Conference. It's not like they're trying to be like the Thunder years ago where you get 48 wins to get the 8th seed. You could probably get in the playoffs at 41, 42 wins this year.
I mean, you can never count a Pop team out. I think they've built something over there that speaks for itself. But I don't think they're in any kind of contention to advance if they do make the playoffs, but I definitely think they have a chance to make the playoffs.
All right. The Knicks have won. Don't adjust your team.
Look out.
The Knicks won 3 straight games and are 6-6 under interim head coach Mike Miller. Matt, is that a ray of hope we see coming through in the Madison Square Garden?
Is Dolan still there?
Yes, he is.
I just like it. I mean, for the it's just unfair to the players. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're talented guys. You know, you can't speak for management. You know, 3 games in a row, I'm sure they're happy, they're playing well. But they definitely do have a few cornerstones that they're starting to realize on that team.
Yeah, we were talking about Mitchell Robinson earlier in the show. Some of these younger guys still playing for pride, still figuring out what it is to be a professional. A guy like Mike Miller, his first shot at the big time. I don't think they're going to make some sudden surge and be beating the Bulls for a playoff conversation, but they're going to be better than they have been.
I like how you put it, man. It's nice for the people involved, maybe not for the team as a whole, but definitely for the players and for Mike Miller, too, given that this is his first
Mike Miller...
Other Mike Miller. I say he got to change his name to Michael Miller now because too much confusion. All right, tonight we have a big matchup with top teams in the East as the Heat host the Raptors. Heat are currently third in the East, a game and a half ahead of the fourth seed Raptors. Both teams come in playing well, both having won 7 of the last 10 games. Dave, are the Heat or the Raptors the biggest threat or the biggest threat in the East?
I go with the Heat. This is no disrespect to the Raptors. They have a championship head coach, so the Heat.
So do
they have a rising young star in Pascal Siakam, but
so
the Heat have two. And Jimmy and Bam Adebayo has really made strides in his game. And I think the defensive identity for this Heat team, when they really go after teams, is a little bit stronger. And you throw in some wild cards like a Nunn and like a Tyler Hero, and I go with the Heat. Yeah.
I got the Heat. First of all, shout out to Toronto, though, because I completely counted them out at the beginning of the season after losing Kawhi. But, you know, Pascal Siakam has stepped up. Van Vliet stepped up. Their crew has stepped up. But I'm taking the Heat for pretty much what Dave said. I mean, I think their young core is very talented. They have one of the best leaders in the game, and they play hard. You know, so they're going to be a tough out. And they can shake. I still think they're one piece away. I don't know what that piece looks like, but I think they're one piece away from actually competing in the East.
I think the cool thing about those two teams, they both have dealt with injuries and kept winning even so. All right, there are a lot of great games to choose from tonight, as you can see here, but there can only be one League Pass game of the night, and it is Nuggets at Pacers. Pacers are favored by 1.5 at home tonight, but will have to contain Nikola Jokic, who has 11 double-doubles in his last 14 games. The Nuggets are looking to rebound from a blowout loss to the Rockets, while the Pacers are looking to build off a big win over the Sixers. Despite the Nuggets' bad loss the other night, they are 8-2 in their last 10 games and are second in the West. Matt, are we paying enough attention to the Nuggets?
I think we're paying enough attention to them, but I just think they're too young still. I think they're maybe a year or two away from really being a contender. You know, I predicted they'd be at the top of the West because they are a young team and they're playing as hard as they can every single night, and they want the one seed. They want that home court advantage. But when you come into the playoffs, it's veteran experience is what's going to get you over the hump. And to me, the only bet they really have is Paul Millsap.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that their best player is a center, I think that's why they don't get as much notoriety as other teams, who have this type of record. But like I said, I just think they're a little too young. But I love the fact that Michael Porter Jr. is finally kind of
starting to play.
He's a very talented piece that can help them get over that hump.
Yeah, I think it's a proper amount of attention we're paying them so far. They are a very good team. They play excellent at home. Denver is a true home court advantage. Michael Malone has some consistency with this group. And you get into a playoff series, though, you look at it and you say, who is that next level talent who, when the opposing defense does everything they can to shut you down, what can they do when things break down? And I don't think that Jokic and Jamal Murray are those guys. Yeah. And everyone else are complimentary pieces that fill in around those two.
Yeah, Murray's streaky and Jokic is a big, so it's hard for him to get the ball. And he's not a big time scorer either.
Right.
But what I do like about the Nuggets is they've been elite defensively. And this is a team 3 years ago, they were one of the worst in the league. And now they are one of the best, even though they didn't add anybody or change their coaches or anything like that. All right, that's the buzzer. First returns for All-Star voting are in, and the results may surprise you. Luka Doncic was the leading vote-getter, followed by Giannis and LeBron. Are you surprised that Luka is the leading vote-getter, Matt?
Shout out David Stern. I think
that's
his vision, you know, globalizing the game. Not surprised at all. I mean, he's, you know, having young kids now and coaching AAU, I want to be Luka. I want to shoot like Luka. I want to play like Luka. So he's, you know, he's taking the league by storm, and I love it.
He's done it fun to watch. Also, of course, that it's an international voting process. This isn't just domestic votes, so obviously.
But Slovenia has like 3 million people. Like, it's not like he's getting the China vote.
He's got a lot of American votes, too, because he's out there killing.
To me, someone not in this graphic who stands out to me, Taco Fall was a top 10 vote getter in East Coast front quote.
Man, I'm telling you, my kids are not that into the NBA. They love Taco Fall, man. I can't call it.
My kids love Luka, so.
All right, thanks to Clinton, Dave, and Matt for joining us today. Rach will be back tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Here's the thing. Give me one good David Stern story real quick. 3, 2, nothing.
We miss him. We just
miss him. Man.